Chris Squire from his solo album Fish Out of Water, and before that, Yes from the Yes album, and I've Seen All Good People. Chris Squire in the studio with me tonight on Thursday night at 11, and Chris, it's a pleasure after all these years of listening to you and seeing you on stage to meet a guy that turned out to be my favorite bass player. Though I suppose you're many people's favorite bass players, Circus Magazine readers, Melody Maker readers. As bass players go, you're one of the types that people continually enjoy.
Well, good.
But at the same time, you must have to make a lot of changes along the way in order to keep up with your own artistic pursuits.
Yeah, is that a question?
Yeah, okay.
Okay, all right. Well, good evening, everyone. Listening to CHUM.
FM.
FM. Yeah. I mean, it's just a question of working at it, continually working at what you think is, or what I think, is the right direction to go at. And when you find a thread of a new idea or a thread of an old idea which you can see a new way of putting it, then you can, promote that. And that's what I do, I suppose.
And the band seems to be doing that as well, with the revolving stage that you're using now, for
yeah.
example. Tomorrow night we're going to see a stage that goes around, 9 times an hour?
And, I don't know the exact speed, but it's certainly, it goes at different speeds, actually, sometimes fast, sometimes slow.
Spin you right off into the audience.
Oh, yeah. I've been walking around in the daze for the last year.
How long have you been using the stage?
Well, this is the second tour, really. We started off with it last year.
In North America?
Yeah, we did a North American tour with it and eventually went over and did some shows in England as well. And it was a very new experience at that time, both for us and the audiences, obviously. And that was really a year of getting to relate to it, getting to know how to use it, getting to know how to best perform on it, if you like, mm-hmm. because it is a rather different concept for each of the members of the band individually, to learn how to perform in that way, because the fact of the matter is the audience get a changing picture all the time.
Yeah.
And when I'm playing to an audience, I don't have like a point or a source of people or people who you know who are particularly getting off, who you can usually relate to. It's always changing. So you're seeing, that bit of the audience and then that bit. And it's a constant, it's just a circular situation.
Must be fairly difficult to light and to run electrics off of to the main PA.
Yes, it is. It works actually in a clever but simple way. And I don't know if I should give away the technological secrets of the production crew.
It's probably not a lot of need.
But it's very simple. The simple thing with the mics is that they just have a very large cable that actually wraps itself around as the stage turns, I believe, about 4 or 5 generations one way, and then it's reversed. So the thing can coil and uncoil, you see.
Well, that's ingenious. That's probably the simplest way of doing it.
Yeah.
You bury your bass speakers under the stage.
That's right. I used to have them behind me. Now I stand on top of them.
And they shoot up at you.
Yeah, they shoot up into the air, yeah.
Where are they? You feed direct into the PA then? Totally?
No, they're mic'd.
They are too?
They're mic'd actually in the stage itself.
Ah.
And Rick Wakeman has a similar system.
Mm-hmm.
Steve Howe has a slightly different system. He still has his amp slightly above the stage surface, but
is that for
back.
His ears worth? So he can.
Yeah, because I think he was used to a particular thing of hearing the amplifier behind him in one position. And in some ways, it's sort of easier like that, because for me, I had to spend a whole tour last year realizing that I couldn't play to the way I was hearing myself all the time.
Yeah, it would be muddy in some places and good and
exactly right.
Good and strong
and sharp.
Others. Yeah.
And automatically the musician in me tells me to either tighten up or soften up when I hear one of those sounds.
Right.
But it's been a whole learning process of getting to know the fact of even if you're hearing it sounding wrong, that it's still right.
Mm.
And then when you walk over the speaker, if it sounds right to you, then you know you're doing the right thing. But it's not 100% foolproof. I'm still learning it, really.
Hmm. After all this time?
Yeah.
Is it sort of a grate, like a sidewalk grate or something?
Hmm. It's a metal sort of grill work. And the cabinets that I'm using this year were specially developed after last year's learning, so that the speakers have been built into it facing slightly different angles out.
Ah.
Even though they're under, they have some go left and right and some go north and south.
So better coverage for you when you're walking about?
Yeah, it's slightly better, but it will never really be as optimum as having a one-point source sound, I don't think, because then the musician in you can truly react to what is actually happening, whereas there's still a degree of compensation and adjustment. But I mean, I don't know, I've got it down pretty well.
We played You by My Side from your solo album, Fish Out of Water, and that was made 4 years ago.
Yeah, I was just saying, it seems like only two, but
where's your second one?
It's in the mind, I suppose. It, you know, as I said, since I did it for the last 3.5 years, I wanted to do another one to improve on what I saw as lacking in the first one, but I just haven't really got around to it. The band have been working very hard.
Yeah.
During that period we've been doing a lot of tours of North America and Europe and England as well, and getting this round stage thing organized, and we've done two band albums in that period.
Yeah.
The first one being in Switzerland, which meant a whole migration of the whole thing out there and then back. And so the time just flies away, really.
You have songs written that perhaps might fit on a second solo LP?
Yeah, I have things, yeah, rough things that that I always thought I was going to do, but as time goes on, one tends to regurgitate one's ideas anyway and look to new things and put new inspiration into what you think might have been good then. So it's all a learning process, really.
This is kind of a Yes-sounding album, Fish Out of Water. It doesn't sound unlike Yes. In fact, your singing voice is similar enough to John Anderson's to be to fool some people.
Yeah, well, I don't think I have the same sort of years of experience that John has in singing. It takes a long time to learn how to project a certain kind of rock and roll way of singing. Whether it's in classical rock or pure rock and roll or whatever, it's my natural bent is towards playing the bass, really, and that's my prime objective. But I have tried, you know, over the years to develop my singing voice to be more professional, if you like. And I mean, basically, part of the sound of Yes is in the harmonies we do.
Right.
And so therefore my voice is a component part of that harmony, so that would be a recognizable factor.
Yeah, hardly anybody realized, I think, that Phil Collins was in back singing harmonies on Peter Gabriel during the early Genesis years.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, Phil's up front singing and sounding a lot like him.
Yeah.
Well, because...
That tends to happen,
yeah.
I think. I mean, I've obviously learnt a lot from John myself in terms of learning to sing on stage. And that would come about, that sort of taking from whoever one is closest to learn from.
Right.
And so that's how it happens.
The Chris Squire nickname is The Fish.
It has come about, yes.
How's
initially
that?
Initially came from Bill Bruford, the old Yes drummer and recent UK member. And he nicknamed me that because I used to spend a lot of time having baths and showers and things,
living in water.
Yeah. And so I got the name of The Fish, and mostly everybody took up on it.
There's a song called The Fish on the Fragile album.
Yeah. That's about the time I think it became a positive sort of thing. That's when it started. And since then, we've done a few songs about fish, actually. Whales and stuff.
There must be other questions in the city other than mine, so why don't we open up the phone lines and take a few calls.
Okay.
870-9131. And Paul will talk to you, and we'll get in touch with Chris Squire. 870-9131. It's Thursday night at 11 from Chum FM with Larry Wilson and Chris Squire in the studio. And from Fragile, The Fish on Chum FM. Chris Squire from the Fish Out of Water album and Hold Out Your Hand. Chris Squire in the studio with me tonight on Thursday night at 11. And we have a phone call here, and it's about Roger Dean. Oh, there's an earphone. Do you see it in the dark there? See the earphones? There we go.
Okay. Oh, no, these ones.
Those aren't plugged in.
Okay, well, oops. This little organizer.
We'll get it together, folks. Kevin, are you there?
Yeah, I'm right here.
All right. Okay, can you hear Chris?
Yeah.
All right.
I can't hear myself. Oh, yeah, I can.
There you are.
Hello.
Okay, Kevin, go ahead.
Okay, I'm a second-year fine arts student at OCA. And early on this year, my buddy gave me a book of Roger Dean. And Roger Dean was saying in the book that he never did meet the group Yes. Have you met Roger Dean since then?
Yes.
You have? What did you think of him?
Hold on a minute. What was your question? Because Roger Dean did all of the Yes albums from Fragile through to Relayer. They were all continuous albums, and he did the artwork for all of those albums to date.
Did you meet him? Is the question. When did you meet him?
When did I meet him? Well, I suppose in 1973 or two, whenever Fragile was released, and constantly knew him during that period.
Hmm.
About 90, and I met him just a couple of weeks ago as well, before I left England.
What did the group think of the artwork from Roger Dean?
What do we think of what?
The artwork from Roger Dean.
Oh, I think it was excellent. And
must have thought it was pretty good, I guess, to do so many covers. Right?
That's right, yeah. I mean, the thing was is that, he went on to do other things after he did Relayer, because of the interest in his own profession, which was his artwork, he went on to do books and stuff like that, and became very, very busy with that. So he hasn't actually done the last two Yes album covers, which are Going for the One and Tomato. But
be doing more albums for you?
Yeah, it's very possible. He may be doing a new album, which we have coming out very soon, which is going to be a live album, and which is in the process of being debated and discussed at the moment as regards dates and stuff like that when it's coming out. And probably Roger may do some of the artwork, if not all of it.
Does that cover it, Kevin?
Pretty well.
I guess your source was not too accurate, because they've known Roger in person since the Fragile cover.
Yeah.
Yeah? Well, it must be one of his early books I was reading.
Ah, perhaps.
It's an old book. It was pretty well flipped through.
Okay, on we go, and thank you, Kevin.
You're welcome. Bye.
Hi, who do you have here?
Hi, this is Jerry from Willowdale.
Hi, Jerry.
Hi.
You're speaking with Chris Squire.
Yeah, hi, how are you? Welcome to Toronto.
Thank you.
I just like to wonder if, I went to your concert in Buffalo last August.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was very good, and I'd like to wonder if you're going to surprise us tomorrow night with Close to the Edge.
Would you like to be surprised tomorrow night with Close to the Edge?
Oh, I just...
Me too.
Oh, it would just be the best thing that could happen, I tell you. Well, I waited for it, and I just was so disappointed. It was very good, but that song... the best.
Jerry, if we learn about it now, it won't be a surprise tomorrow night, will it?
I mean, everybody has their favorites, but I take what you say as, coming from the heart, and maybe we might... You never know, do you?
I think, Jerry, you speak for most of the metropolitan Toronto area when you say that, too.
That it's a very good album. Perfect.
Okay, all right.
Thanks for your call,
Jerry. We'll have a go for you.
Okay, thank you.
All right, good night. Hi there, who we have?
Yes, I'd like to know how does Chris and his band get all their music together? Do they get any certain thoughts or whatever? How do they come about that type of music?
Well, first of all, you have to learn to play. Obviously, how we get it together is by being together. And the more together we are, the more together the music is, which is basically the same rule that applies to any facet of life, I think. I mean, when we are all working on something, we all put in our ideas and we all put in our energy, and we all put forward what we think could happen and throw out some things and keep others, and basically it's a process of sorting it out like that.
Do you start, does one individual start composing and then everybody picks up, or is
it comes from different point sources. John writes a lot of songs, Steve Howe writes songs, I write songs, and then apart from that we all have, John has little theme ideas, Steve Howe has guitar ideas because he's a guitarist, and I have, you know, bass and drum ideas, and of course Alan and Rick also contribute from their knowledge of their fields as well. So we all try to gain as much from each other as possible.
How do you guys get along? Like after a concert or something, does one guy split to Switzerland or whatever? Do you guys hang around together? Or, you know, like, you know, some groups, you know, they don't see each other for a long time or something like that. Do you guys have close contact with each other all the time? Or
Well, we do. Usually on tour, we're pretty thrown together most of the time. I mean, you know, we eat together and we talk and stuff like that. Yeah, of course, we travel every day on an airplane together.
When you're not on tour, do you hang out? Are you friends off the road and out of the studio?
Not so, to be frank, not so much. No, because I think it's a genuine thing that one needs relief from something, especially after a concentrated touring period where you have been sort of on top of each other. And so it's only right that one needs to have a break. And we usually do that, although we see each other in our office in London.
May I ask one more question?
Quickly.
Okay, how did you get to acquire Stephen Howe for the group?
Well, because he was there and available. And very good.
Did you see him at a gig or what?
I had seen him play in his old band that was called Tomorrow, which you may or may not have ever heard of, which was one of the 60s forefront psychedelic groups in England. And he also had a very good reputation generally. And at the time when Peter Banks left Yes, Steve, you know, was approached, I approached him, and he joined.
Thank you very much, hey, Chris?
Thanks for calling.
Joe, okay?
All right.
Joe. Okay, thank you.
Couple more quickies here, and then we'll wrap it up for the telephone part of it. Hello there?
Hi.
Hi, you're on the air. Who is it?
Bill Tarling.
Hi, Bill.
First of all, just wanted to welcome you to Toronto.
Thank you.
And I was just wondering, have you ever thought of hooking up speakers around the outside of an audience?
What, sense around?
Well, sort of, yeah.
like Virgil Fox does.
Yeah. Like, I was thinking, especially, like, with Rick Wakeman.
Yeah.
The phasing would really work out well.
Maybe.
Well, yeah, I mean, I tell you what, tomorrow night, are you coming to the show?
Oh, I'm trying to get tickets.
Oh, well, if you make it, you should find the gentleman called Mr. Roy Clare, and he'd love to explain the whole process of sound in halls to you, I'm sure, if you're really interested in it.
Oh, that's my
thing.
Roy's the head of Clare Brothers, and he's the most approachable top sound guy in the business.
Yeah, he's a very nice guy, if you can find him, but, I mean, it's a...
He's the one tearing out his hair beside the board.
At the moment, I presume that you haven't seen the show as it's done anyway with the round stage.
Not yet, no.
Well, then I think you're going to see that the whole concept of the sound system is very different from most shows anyway.
Yeah, well, what would be the easiest way to meet him?
Well, just ask somebody for him. I'd hang out around the mixing desk if I were you.
Oh, you're going to end up doing that anyhow.
Okay, great.
Thank you very much.
A future sound engineer in the making there, by the sound of it. And what have I done here? I need to punch that button. Hello there. Hello, hello.
Hello? That's only me.
Anybody home? Nobody home. They've gone away.
They've hung up. They couldn't.
They couldn't stand the wait.
They just couldn't.
Terrible.
That's what a lot of people say.
Chris Squire of Yes. And we'll be back to talk with him some more and play some more music after this. Larry Wilson on Thursday night at 11 with Chris Squire of Yes. And Chris, the Tornado album showed a nice little twist to Yes. A sense of humor came out in Yes that we might not have seen as upfront before.
Yeah.
Was that an intentional kind of humor thing that you put in just to... You know, you've been labeled pretentious over the years and overblown, and especially during that Topographic Oceans portion of your career, there was a lot of criticism coming down on Yes.
Mm.
And all of a sudden, there's a cover with tomatoes splashed all over it, and silly words here and there as well.
What, silly words in the lyrics of the songs?
Yeah, occasionally.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's... I think people appreciate light ways of looking at things as mm-hmm. well as intense ways, and yeah, I think that's something that we all try to learn about, as much as we discover our own personalities. One realizes that there is quite an importance in promoting humor as well as
art,
you know, serious approach.
Yeah,
and when one can combine the both. You know, then you're getting a broader look at the possibilities in music, I suppose.
Since Wakeman returned, Yes seems to be a...
Oh, we've been much funnier since he came.
Yeah. Well, Rick has always had a real good sense of humor anyway.
Mm.
He's shown it in a lot of ways, like doing commercials on stage with his keyboards. And
yeah, if he were here now, he'd be getting people to call in to try to work out other meanings of the station call letters. You know, he has this... when he goes on the air, he takes the station call letters and says, okay, I want you all to call up and tell me your meaning of CHUM. And some of them are quite amazing.
FM. FM.
FM?
We're really conscious about that.
I see. Okay. CHUM, FM. Well, that's a long phrase.
We call it CHUM FM. It's shorter. It's easier. Three syllables. You want
anyway,
to try
it? Yeah.
CHUM FM.
CHUM FM.
Hey.
As opposed to
hire the
FM.
Guy quickly. Hire the guy, we need him.
Okay, so, yeah, so Rick's funny, and, you know, there's, as I said, there's something to be learnt in that.
Mm.
It's a relief to humour. And the tomato cover has some feeling towards that, definitely. I think that's possibly the main reason why I liked it. In that it was attempting to put another slant on. I mean, why not call the Yes album Tomato?
Why not?
I don't think the next one will be called anything like it, or the one after that, but, you know, it's good to do that sort of thing.
Hind quarter.
Hind quarter?
Yeah. Tomato's a vegetable, might as well go to meat next time. Hind quarter of beef.
Yeah.
A lot of guitar players, a lot of axemen of the bass and lead persuasion collect instruments.
Mm.
You into that? I know Steve Howe is.
Yeah, he has a large collection. I don't have anywhere like as many instruments as he does.
You collect pedals, right?
Yeah, pedals and tennis shoes, actually.
Tennis shoes.
Yeah, I have a collection of I think about 50 pairs of tennis shoes at home, but that's sort of irrelevant. The guitars. I usually come about because I usually tend to try and go for instruments that I know I can use,
right.
Or I think I know I can use, that I think I can get something out of them. And rather than just collecting something for the sake of hanging it on the wall or something like that.
You're one of the guys who helped the Rickenbacker bass guitar gain legendary status.
I have used one all this time, yes. And a lot of people do buy them consistently.
You're also quite into effects.
Yes. Yeah.
On your bass.
Yeah.
And there are so few bass players with seemingly the imagination to apply a difference in sound to their instrument that they don't do by their fingers or how they play. It's quite refreshing, even after all these years, to hear Chris Squire play bass, because you never quite know how it's going to sound.
No, I think that every night when we go on stage.
But, rock and roll heebie-jeebies. Yeah. Mm.
But, yeah, I am into technology and music, and most of all being able to use it correctly.
Without restricting yourself to a...
It takes a lot of time. All those sort of instruments, like gizmos and effects, take time to learn about them, because very often you can pick something up and have a go with it for a little while and think it's really a lot of rubbish, but you can then take it a stage further and discover something that's quite special about a certain thing. But it does take, as you say, quite a lot of imagination
learning it,
and quite a lot of time. And one of the things is it's being able to conceive, I think, when you get to a certain stage, the possibility of maybe it getting to another thing that you can hear. I don't think there's much point in using effects if you can't really have an idea about what you think it's going to be like.
Before.
Because otherwise it's a bit blind. But that's not to say that I haven't also taken things on blind as well and then gleaned something out of them at a later date, maybe 2 or 3 years after I own the thing. It's just a question of working at it, really.
Right. Your attack, or your attack of the instrument, the way you play the instrument is a little more percussive than most people, I think. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, probably. Although
it's more aggressive.
Yeah, bass playing has become very percussive in recent times, anyway.
Yeah.
Especially with the high-powered funk records and stuff like that.
Yeah. Mm.
Basses have become very, very hyper in many sort of respects. But, I have a certain level of percussion combined with follow-through tone, if you like, that I try to aim for. But, of course, my idea of that changes with every year that I go through experimenting, I suppose. Mm. One's ear never really hears one sound. It's always a question of hearing something else next year. It must be that way.
And you must keep changing.
Yeah, you must at least be satisfied with what you're doing, and that's what I do aim for.
Right. And in staying at that plane, you have to keep ahead of yourself.
Yeah, you do, really.
Did you study?
Not in any formal sense, no. Not in the sense of reading a lot of books. In fact, I've been asked a few times to do a bass guitar tutor, and I've always been very interested to do it, and I'd like to do it, but I always get this feeling when I start seriously sitting down to think about it that it would only have one page with the words sort of written on it. Well, nothing that I can say will actually help you do anything.
Do you really feel that way? I mean, there must be a few words of wisdom in that head after all these years.
No, there's very many words of wisdom and a lot of words of less than wisdom too. But the point is that you can't really it's not really very easy to teach people about attaining something that isn't in them anyway.
Yeah.
That's the point I'm making, really. You know, it would be very difficult to do something on a very high level as regards a teaching sort of situation, because it does come down to the individual at the end.
There are a lot of magazines out these days. There's a very healthy music magazine market happening. Mm. There's International Musician and Recording World, which we've been seeing here as an import for years, and now is they just put out the second North American, although they call it American edition.
Yeah.
And there's a guitar player, contemporary keyboard, that lot, and now Fret magazine from that. They have columns on how to play the instruments in them.
Mm. Yeah.
I wonder how useful they can be.
In terms of the
way you were talking, right?
They can be useful. There's no doubt about that they'll give an approach, or they'll give somebody's approach.
And a practice exercise, and that's always good.
To a way of doing something. But that can be as frustrating for someone who really feels music in a deep sense in some ways. It can frustrate the one against the other. It's a question of combining the two, of being able to accept a certain amount of foregone knowledge and then being able to inject into it your own feeling towards where you think you want to go.
and explore to get there.
Yes, that's right. It's very important to explore. That's why you could never create a superstar totally out of a textbook.
Yeah. Your style is more melodic, too, than most bass players. And you're mixed pretty high on the
records. Melody is important. And
sometimes I wonder if you're part of the rhythm section. That's a compliment as opposed to an insult.
Sometimes you wonder why. Wonder if I am or...
If you are part of the rhythm section.
Well, I think that the rhythm and melody are both equally as important. And the combination of how one gets to being able to maintain the traditional sort of role of making the bass functional within the music and giving a solid bass for the other musicians who play the higher scale instruments relate to, and at the same time being able to inject the melody into that percussive sort of root of it at the same time.
It's a tough assignment.
Yeah, it is. I mean, well, it is and it isn't.
Who do you admire who plays bass?
Jimi Hendrix. Because he did play bass. And I used to like all the traditional people who are well known from England, like John Entwistle and Jack Bruce.
Yeah.
And on the other hand, I used to like Larry Graham very much as Sly. And even after he left Sly, I used to think Graham Central Station was certainly a very powerful force in sort of the opening up of funk music as it has now sort of blossomed in this country.
Right, and ironically, they're not around to enjoy it very much.
Well, I mean,
they're around, but nobody's paying any attention.
Well, you know, it does often very much become the case many times that many innovators don't actually enjoy the success of their creation.
Yeah.
It's very often taken out of their hands and packaged in a more commercial way and sort of... then it's they can be forgotten. But I don't think Larry Graham is dead as far as music's concerned. I'm sure that he will come up with something that will be very big at some point or other, because he's a man who has it in him. And it's the same with people like Jack Bruce, who also had a career of being very high and very sort of not around as well for periods of time. But those people tend to have, those are necessary breaks in a career in some ways.
Maybe looking back on them, they seem necessary.
I think so. I mean, well, at the time, even, they are necessary.
Mm.
Because it isn't an easy life in many ways. You can't go at it and at it and at it for years and years and years without at least relating to the fact of while you're doing it to be able to take the time to ease the pressure off.
Right.
So, I think all people who have it in them eventually come around to fruition, or they go for the big one.
Uh-huh.
And then that's, that's my remark about Jimi Hendrix, if you like.
Sitting across the table from me, I notice you have huge hands. They're amazingly big.
And that's why I started playing bass.
As opposed to guitar or something?
Yeah, I think so. I'm also tall, and it sort of fitted better.
Five fingers fit better on four, too. Four strings.
Yeah.
You play an eight-string bass at some point, do you not?
Yeah.
Do you have an eight-string?
I have a customized Rickenbacker. Bass string, yeah.
Are they all bass strings?
It's just the same design as a 12-string guitar, where you have octaves.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just like a bass with octaves, with a higher octave.
Mm-hmm. So each string has a double an octave higher.
That's exactly right. And they're not the easiest instruments in the world to play, to get every note out, clearly.
I can imagine. Carl Palmer has a trick bass he uses, too.
Does he?
He's a six or
eight. He's a really good bass player.
I'm not Carl. That's a lunch? Sure. Any old time. That other guy.
Gregory?
Yeah. Greg Lake. Plays a... Hamer? One of those things with an aluminum machine. An aluminum top on them.
Ah, Kramer.
Kramer.
Yeah.
Close enough for rock and roll.
Yeah.
Chris, thanks a lot for coming by tonight.
Okay.
Going to see you tomorrow night. It's my night off, and I get a chance to go to a concert.
Great.
I'm very pleased it's yes. It's been too long that you've been to Toronto. You haven't been here for a while.
Yeah, people have been saying that since we've been back to Canada. But, I mean, it's a pleasure to come back.
How long a show do you do?
How long?
Yeah.
Approximately 2 hours, I think.
Oh, right.
I never really look at my watch. There's a lot going on.
Chris Squire, make another solo album soon, please.
Okay.
This one still feels good after 4 years on my turntable. Let's hear another tune off your album if we can find something that's 7 minutes long. Let's do it.
Lucky Seven.
Chris Squire from Shamathan.